And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And welcome to another Hoops Adjacent episode of the Athletic NBA Show. David Aldridge here in D.C. Out in Cali, my man Waz Lambre. Waz, what's up, sir?
I'm good, D.A. I'm good. Just maintaining, man. Just looking forward to the All-Star break because I had the wisdom of taking my own vacation during the All-Star break. So, you know, looking forward to a few days off and just relaxing and chilling.
You don't have to go to Atlanta with everybody else?
No, I'm not going to Atlanta. I won't be in Atlanta for that.
Well, neither will I, and I can't say that I'm sad about that. So, unfortunately. So we're going to talk about all things Atlanta with our buddy Chris Kirchner from The Athletic, who covers the Hawks. And Chris, is this your first time on Hoops Adjacent?
This is my first time.
Oh, my God.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly, man. Man, glad you could make it. Thanks for joining us, man. So, yeah, Chris covers the Hawks, does a great job. Had for, you know, the first year, had, let's be honest, a really bad team that he nonetheless made interesting through his reporting and writing. And now has a disappointing team that's in the news because they just cashiered Lloyd Pierce on Monday. And it was a bit surprising, I suppose, to the outside, but to the inside, not really. And Chris, I would love your thoughts on what were the tea leaves that led you to believe and people that, you know, followed the team and followed the league to believe that Lloyd didn't have much time left.
So I knew going into the Oklahoma City game this past Friday that these four games were going to be important. I did not realize that he was going to get fired in the middle of their four-game road trip. I knew that it was trending toward him getting fired at some point in the next few days. I expected it was going to be after Wednesday's game against Orlando or the day after when they were back in Atlanta. So I knew it was the time was ticking. And like you said, I don't think it was necessarily a surprise to learn that this was happening just because of the fact that I knew things were going sideways in the locker room. There just wasn't a lot of trust in Pierce from the players. And when you don't have the trust in the players, particularly Trae Young, who is obviously the centerpiece of the Hawks roster, and you're the coach, it's probably not going to go well for you because obviously they're always going to side with the player. And in this case, I mean, Trae is the franchise.
You know, I have to wonder, Chris, because I kind of feel bad for Lloyd Pierce because, you know, there's no track record of him being successful with this team, but they haven't had good players his entire tenure there. Right. So what is he actually being judged on? Is it an inability to, you know, form that bond with the franchise player? You know, the guy that they were fine letting Luka Doncic go to take on. Or is it just a matter of this year there were expectations and he just hasn't met them? Like, which one is it? Because even this year, they've been really injured. Their prize free agent acquisition basically hasn't played. What is he being judged against?
I think it's a combination of not meeting those expectations. And this is the first year in his era that there were expectations to win. And I think ultimately the bigger thing is not being able to manage the locker room. Because in the story that David and I worked on together, along with Sam Amick and Shams Charania, you know, he didn't have the locker room at all. Like, there was no trust in, from either side of the equation, on Lloyd's side and the players, and the players in Lloyd. And they felt that possibly getting a new voice in there, and they had an experienced coach on the bench in Nate McMillan, who is now the interim coach. They felt that perhaps with McMillan now in charge, that the players would respond better. It's important to note that Trey is a fan of McMillan and has enjoyed learning from him so far this season. I think that is an important piece of this puzzle. But yeah, I mean, when you look at Lloyd, and if he was given a fair opportunity, I think there's definitely an argument to be made that he wasn't, just because when you look at the roster the past 2 years, I don't think Phil Jackson or Red Auerbach could have coached Evan Turner, Chandler Parsons, Damian Jones, Alan Crabb to a playoff record. Like, I mean, that's just the situation. They were built to not win many games, and they didn't win many games. They accomplished their goal of getting high draft picks. They got DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, in the past couple of years, Onyeka Okongwu this year at number 6. So they got the draft picks, but ultimately I think his inability to connect with the players was the main reason why he got out.
I that is always, especially with a young team, and we saw it in Denver a few years ago with Brian Schoen. We had Brian on the show a couple of weeks ago. And it's always when you have a young team, that's always what you hear from management. Well, you know, he didn't really connect with the young guys. And I'm asking you this, Chris, just as an observer, because you know all the parties involved. I mean, what responsibility do the young guys have to be coached? You know what I mean? Like, you have to accept coaching. That's what the NBA is all about. That's what Chuck Daly, the great Hall of Fame, late great Hall of Fame coach, said many years ago, that players allow you to coach them in the NBA. And if they allow you to coach them, then you have a chance to be successful as a head coach. So where is the player's responsibility to allow themselves to be coached, to allow themselves to be criticized, so that they don't always take it as complaining or throwing them under the bus or whatever you want to call it? It's coaching. You know what I mean? So where is their responsibility on this?
Yeah, I mean, there should be a big responsibility on the player side of things, and there just wasn't. And, you know, right or wrong, that's ultimately what got Lloyd fired. And when you, I mean, I've obviously watched every single Hawks game in the past 3 seasons and know how the players have felt during this time. It just seemed like, especially with the young players, that they came into the league thinking they knew everything and their way was right. And they were given a lot of opportunities from the beginning, especially with, you know, Trey, Cam, John, DeAndre, Kevin, all these young guys were thrown into the starting rotation essentially from day one. And there just weren't great habits formed from the beginning, just because of the fact that, again, winning wasn't necessarily the biggest expectation, especially in those first 2 seasons. And over time, when those bad habits are formed, it's kind of hard to break them. And I think that's what we've seen this year. You know, Trey and Lloyd had met this past summer to fix the situation. Obviously, both of them understood that the relationship they shared with one another in the first 2 years wasn't great. And in order to make the playoffs this season, they had to see eye to eye. They left that trip this past offseason feeling like they were on good terms. But once the team started losing, Trey in particular grew frustrated with the situation and felt like this wasn't going to work and Lloyd wasn't the right coach for him long term.
That's interesting that you say that Trey has already developed a bond or respect with Nate McMillan. Obviously, in the offseason, you amongst a lot of people noticed that, you know, Lloyd had a sort of mandate to get something done this season. And then they hire as his lead assistant a guy who's got a fairly established resume as a winner as a coach in the NBA, then we could all kind of see the conflict of interest maybe there. So it's interesting how that's all working. You talk to us about that whole dynamic all season.
Yeah, it has been interesting. And to Nate's point, he did not accept the interim tag immediately. He wanted to make sure that Lloyd was okay with it. They were close with one another. Nate had said before when he took over for Lloyd a couple weeks ago when Lloyd had his second child that he came to Atlanta with the understanding that, you know, he was going to be working for Lloyd. He didn't want to be a head coach this year. He wanted to help Lloyd because he was his friend and thought highly of his plan. And then obviously 2 weeks after he took over for three games, he's now the interim coach. But as far as Trey and Nate go, I think one of the biggest reasons why Trey has respected Nate is because, I mean, obviously Nate was a point guard. He's been in his position before. He's had success in the league. He's known to have his point guards when he's in control play freely and develop a system around the point guard. And I think that's important for Trey because over the past three seasons, he felt that Lloyd did not kind of cater to him, even though from my perspective, I thought they did because the offense was obviously heavily circled around Trey. Everything revolved around Trey. They ran, you know, pick and roll pretty much every single play on the offensive side of the floor for Trey. So I don't know what exactly why he
What could have been more catered to him than him being probably the most heliocentric player in the entire NBA, which, by the way, justifiably so, right? We saw what happened. We saw what would happen when other guys tried to initiate offense for them or when Trey was just straight up not on the floor. They stunk. So what could he have done more for this guy?
That's the part that I haven't been able to figure out. I think the main thing for Trey in particular is he's one of those guys who sees what others say about him on social media. He can't win. You can't build around him. You will never win a championship around him. And for someone like him who's 22 years old and you know, is on social media and sees what others say. I mean, from the moment he took his first shot in summer league in Utah, he airballed it and everybody was calling him a bust and that got to him. And I think he's seen all this over the past couple seasons and was like, man, like maybe something has to change. Maybe Lloyd is the problem. Maybe I can't win with this coach. Maybe if we brought in someone else, I would have a better chance at winning. That's my theory, is the fact that, you know, he is so, you know, aware of what's said about him that he needed to change that image.
It's, you know, I am not at all surprised. And again, nobody who really follows the league is surprised that they picked Trae Young over Lloyd Pierce. Okay, that's fine. It happens all the time in the league. But what troubles me about Atlanta is that it is, you know, it's been so obvious that Trae Young was the guy that ownership wanted. They wanted him to sell tickets, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with bringing in a guy that can sell tickets if he's good. And Trae Young's good. He's beyond good. He's an all-star. Okay, so there's nothing wrong with that. But the reason to fire a guy is something that I just think ownership has to own. And I get along with Travis Schlenk fine. We have a good relationship. There's nothing wrong with our relationship. I thought it was unfair to put him out there when this wasn't real. I mean, I don't think this was his call. I just don't think this was his call. I think this was Tony Ressler's call. And why wasn't Tony Ressler at the press conference last night, or at the Zoom conference, let's put it that way, last night? And own it. And it's okay to say, hey, I had to pick and I picked the player, because that happens in this league. We all understand that. I just wondered why he wasn't there.
Yeah, it's an interesting point to bring up because, you know, a few years ago when the Hawks got rid of Mike Budenholzer, wrestler was there when they had a big off season this past, you know, a couple months. Wrestler spoke about the free agents they signed and the expectations coming into the season. When Lloyd was hired, he was there. And then when they fired Lloyd, he's nowhere to be found. And it's also interesting that, you know, Wrestler was in Miami for this road trip, and Travis did this press conference from the hotel. Right. Wrestler is there. It's not like they had to, you know, he lives in California permanently. It's not like they had to, like, you know, wrangle him in for a Zoom conference.
Right. He wasn't in Dubai, right? I
mean, exactly. Right? Like he was in Miami. So to throw Travis out there when, and I get it from Travis's perspective, because he was asked about this last night about, you know, ultimately who made the final call, and Travis said it's him. I mean, anyone with common sense knows that the owner is going to have final say on this. It's not just Travis making this decision with Landry Fields, the assistant general manager, and the other guys in the front office. Wrestler has to sign off on this. So it was interesting to not see Wrestler answer questions last night from reporters.
They never do. They never have to answer to anybody. They speak when they feel like it. If they want to stay in their caves and just appear, like, you know, if or when the Hawks ever turn this around, I bet he'll be the first one doing a press conference. But when the going gets tough, the owners never, like, I don't understand how that's not part of the collective bargaining agreement. You guys should have to talk once a month. I talk every day. Talk once a month, man. You fire your freaking coach and you don't even address the media. That's a lot to me.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, he was the one who was talking after they signed Bogdan Bogdanović, Danilo Gallinari, Chris Dunn, talking about how these signings were going to get the Hawks into the playoffs. And then, I mean, he's nowhere to be found when, you know, shit hits the fan and they fire the coach and he's nowhere to be found. So I thought that was disappointing.
In these times, I'm always reminded of that famous interview that Dolan gave to Michael Kay, you know, after the Phil Jackson thing had turned into went haywire. And he basically explained, he's like, look, I went out and I paid a dude who's got 13 championships, $60 million. I put him in charge. I gave him autonomy. I don't gotta talk. I paid this dude to be my human meat shield. Like, what are you talking about? Like, why am I talking anymore? That was essentially what he said to Michael Kay. Like, I'm done talking. You know? And I understand a lot of these guys are like, look, that's what I pay Schlenk for, to be the mouthpiece, to take the hits.
Get it. I get it.
You know,
right.
I get it. True. But it'd be nice if they were, you know, held accountable every now and again.
No, right. There's some truth to that. I mean, why I think Jerry Krause was, Jerry Krause was so, you know, unfairly kind of castigated for just doing what Jerry Reinsdorf told him to do. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he made that decision on his own not to pay Scottie Pippen. You know what I mean? Like, come on. Like, somebody made, it wasn't his call. So, you know, I get it. I get it. But to your point, when you pick Trae Young over Doncic, you did that ownership. Not the head coach, not the GM. You did that. You said, I'd rather have Trae Young in here than Luka Doncic. Okay. You got to own that. You have to own that, you know, and you got to own firing the coach. You got to own picking the player over the coach. That's all I'm saying. Just own it, you know? As Waz mentioned earlier, you know, Chris, all of the moves that they made, I mean, on paper, they all sound great, but if the guys aren't actually playing, I don't know how you can blame the coach for that. You can't. I mean, I don't know how you can blame anybody for that. The guys aren't actually playing. And when they get on the floor like Gallinari, they're playing banged up or hurt and they can't move. I mean, I just don't know how you can judge anything that's going on with Atlanta right now. I think it's kind of, I actually think they've kind of, I don't want to say overachieved, but given the fact that they haven't had their squad together one game this year, I'm not sure how you could expect a whole lot better than what they've given you so far.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think one of the main things that Wrestler grew frustrated over in these past several weeks is the fact that the Hawks have blown 11 leads in the fourth quarter this season. And from my understanding, he felt that because of the fact that they were able to be in the games in those late situations, they had enough talent to ultimately win the game. But when you look at the record, 11 of the 20 losses have come when the team has blown it in the fourth quarter. The Miami game the other night, Lloyd's final game, they were tied 3:38 left in the game, down two with like 2:30 left, and they end up losing by 10. And it's the same. It was the same story over and over again this year, where they were in it late, they had it tied, or they were ahead by a couple points, and they ended up losing by 10 points. And just from my understanding, Wrestler just couldn't take it anymore. He felt that the talent was good enough to win. They were in the games, so why can't they close it out? And I think that was ultimately one of the bigger reasons why, when you're looking at in-game situations or in-game reasons for why Pierce was fired, that was one of them. But as far as the free agents go, yeah, I mean, they haven't gotten anything really from any of these guys. When Rondo's played, when Rondo's off the floor, the Hawks are 14.9 points better. Gallinari can't move. I think I can get 20 points on him if he's defending me. Bogdanovich has played 9 games. He's expected back for the Miami game on Tuesday night in limited minutes. Chris Dunn hasn't played a game. I mean, the only free agent who's actually been available is Solomon Hill, and they were not expecting Solomon Hill to be a rotation player.
Yeah, I just it's just odd to me. I mean, I understand expectations, but that seems to be. It seems to be, to me, to be a misreading of NBA basketball, which is you don't win NBA games in the last 3 minutes with your role players. Do people understand that? Like, you don't, you know, am I wrong, Waz? I mean, you know, like, you know, what's the name? Caruso's not winning games for the Lakers at the end. He's not.
Of course not. Of course,
you know what
not.
I mean. I mean, and I'm not hating on Caruso. He's a hell of a player. He's a good player. Myers Leonard's not winning games for the Heat at the end.
Hawks were supposed to win games this year because of Trae Young, because of Bogey, because of John Collins, right? Because Clint Capella is an excellent defender, excellent role man, excellent screen setter. Because these guys are of a certain quality. But yeah, they're supposed to be winning games because of Trae Young, John Collins, who wants to be paid, by the way. And you know, and probably Bogdanovich to an extent, because he was seen as somebody who's going to be a difference maker, a guy who, you know, you wouldn't mind taking the ball out of Trae's hand to allow him to operate in pick and roll, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, you know, the sort of hypothesis of this team, the idea of this team has never even been able to come to fruition, you know, because of injuries. So, you know, I get a power struggle. I understand that I would probably side with Trae Young too, because I actually think really high of him as a player and his ability to generate quality offense no matter what the pieces are out there. But you know, it's just tough for Pierce, and you know, you don't want to cry for these guys. Like, you know, your contract as a coach is fully guaranteed, and he's made millions of dollars doing this job. So, you know, he won't be on the streets or anything, but still it sucks whenever somebody loses their gig.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough for someone like Lloyd. I think maybe in a positive, I mean, his wife just had a baby, so at least he'll be able to help around the house more. And
the miracle of life. Right. Yeah, there you go. Right.
I mean, she did have a baby 2 weeks ago. So, I mean, I would assume that his wife isn't too unhappy with the fact that he'll be able to help around the house more. But I mean, as you said, for Lloyd, you know, going into this year, he had a fourth-year team option that wasn't picked up. Right then, you could tell that, okay, like Lloyd had to do something, you know, well this season in Wrestler's eyes and Schlenk's eyes to have a chance to have that fourth-year team option picked up. When the season progressed, there was no indication that that was trending that way. And once again, that's a sign that they didn't feel like Lloyd was going to be here long-term. And ultimately, they felt that, you know, getting Pierce out now with 2 games left before the All-Star break, the guys were together. They were able to communicate the morning after Pierce was fired, Tuesday morning, and you know, say what they were planning to do long term, McMillan's system, the way he was going to implement it. It's going to take some time, but you know, I think the timing was definitely eye-opening to some, but it does make sense that they want at least two games before the All-Star break while they're all together before they go their separate ways.
So what's going to be expected of Nate McMillan coming in here? Like, what's now, you know, because that's what this is all about, right? Like, you don't get fired without there being some sort of recognition on both sides that expectations weren't met. And so expectations have to be set. To the best of your knowledge, what is the expectation of Nate McMillan? If they win at the same clip that they won basically before Lloyd Pierce got let go, is that good enough if Trae Young feels good about his new coach?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, coming into the season, it was very clear from Tony Ressler, from Lloyd, that this team was going to be in the playoffs this season. That's the goal. They want to be in the playoffs. I don't know if, you know, say, for example, they get the 10th seed and win those two games in the play-in tournament and end up being the 8th seed. Is that enough? And they get swept by, say, Brooklyn or whatever. Is that going to be enough for McMillan to get a long-term job? I don't know. I think they wanted to be higher than the 7th seed, so they didn't have to play in the play-in tournament to, you know, guarantee themselves a playoff spot. But as far as the expectations for McMillan long term, I really don't know. I mean, it's he has 38 games to prove that he is the guy for this job. If the Hawks don't make the playoffs, I don't see any way that McMillan's going to be here long term, even if Trae is a fan, just because of the fact that they wouldn't have met their main goal coming into the season, which is making the playoffs. So if that doesn't happen, I would expect an entire new staff next season.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE SIPC.
Hey, I want to ask you also, Chris, while we have you on, you're in Atlanta, obviously. This very, very odd All-Star game is going to be played in Atlanta on Sunday with everything kind of crammed into one day instead of over 4 days as they usually do. What is the vibe in Atlanta right now? Are people like hype for this, or are people like, it's not, there's no public events. I've seen a handful of parties, but it's obviously nothing like it normally would be on an All-Star weekend.
Well, judging from my Instagram and the Atlanta accounts that I follow, there's definitely hype around this All-Star game. I mean, for example,
I was about to say, DA, if Compound is not considered a public event arena, Compound is hosting. They're hosting events on multiple nights. Shouts to Bobby Schmurder. He just got out of prison. He's booked 2 nights at the Compound.
I got you. Okay, go on. Educate me. Go ahead.
I was just about to say, Bobby Schmurder got out of jail and he's partying this weekend in Atlanta. So there's definitely buzz in the city on the event on Sunday, even if it's not a regular game. From my perspective, and obviously living here for the past year while we've been in this pandemic, Atlanta is probably the last city I would choose to host something like this, just because of the fact that, I mean, most of the city hasn't taken this seriously. And I don't think it's going to change until everybody, or at least we're all vaccinated at a level where it's still safe to go around. I personally will not be at Compound or Blue Flame or Magic City this weekend because I value my health.
With your wings piece? I mean, that was one of the best things in the whole section.
We need
last
that
year,
follow-up, Chris.
Company.
We need it.
Was your wings piece.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Magic City will be popping this weekend. I will be far away from Magic City, even though I do live a few miles away from Magic City.
You know, it blows my mind as somebody who lives in LA who, you know, we were completely basically shut down again for a few months and very recently have allowed, you know, outdoor dining, et cetera, et cetera. And you hear that they're about to let people do indoor dining, et cetera, et cetera. And because, Chris, I have family in Gwinnett County, you know, I'm getting firsthand accounts about what's going on in Hotlanta, which is just not what I just told you LA was doing. It's the complete and utter opposite.
Yeah, the clubs are packed. I mean, I was walking around Saturday afternoon and the bars were slammed. I mean, it's just like what we were living like in March 2019, where, you know, right, you can go to bars on Saturday afternoon and not worry about a thing. That's just what it's like here. It's that no one, you know, a lot of people aren't taking it seriously and living life that, you know, in pure bliss, that nothing is going around them.
It's bizarre to me. This is totally bizarre to me. I don't think I haven't traveled since last February or March or whenever it was. It's just crazy to me that there are people that are just like, no, nothing's bad's happening. What are you talking about? 500,000 people and, dead. What?
And DA, listen, because, you know, I still follow a bunch of people from home, right? From New York. And New York, again, was one of those places that was fairly strict about locking everything down and, you know, not being able to do public outings and all of that stuff. And I've seen multiple trips from people to Atlanta specifically to participate in what Chris was just describing. Houston, don't think I forgot about you either, Houston. Houston was getting busy too, so we can't leave Houston out. They've been like, hey man, we're going full steam ahead with this thing.
That's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So the weekend, but wait a minute, if the players aren't coming in until Sunday, how can you advertise see LeBron or whoever at the spot on Friday and Saturday night when it's public knowledge these guys aren't coming in until the game day, until the day of the game, and they're leaving right after?
Well, I mean, the one thing about Atlanta, this is a city just built on hype. If they, I mean, like I said a few minutes ago, I mean, Bobby Schmurder got out of jail and, you know, the first place he's coming to party is Atlanta.
First place he's booked.
Yeah. So, I mean, Atlanta. Yeah. So, that place is going to be slammed. It's just the fact that, you know, anything around the NBA or, I mean, there's a lot of other rappers who are going to be performing on Saturday night and I think Friday night as well. I know the NBA actually cracked down on these places, like using their name associated with it because they don't want to be associated with it. But
right.
I mean,
it's pure ignorance on the fact of the NBA to not think that these places and clubs and bars were going to use this event to promote whatever event at their establishment.
I mean, that's funny to me that, first of all, I don't think the NBA, I know they say they cracked down. I'm sure they did, but, you know, they don't really care. They really like the associations, I think, more than anything else. They just can't say it publicly, but they love the DL associations with all of Atlanta, you know, the whole flavor of Atlanta. But official Atlanta, you know, the mayor is like, don't come, don't have parties. Are they going to crack down? Are you going to see Atlanta PD in the streets breaking stuff up if it gets out of hand?
No, they're not going to be doing this because, I mean, again, this has been going on for over a year now. There were, I believe it was like 1 or 2 months where the city's orders were to, you know, stay in place and
shelter in place.
Yeah, don't go anywhere. Right.
So it was 1 or 2 months.
Yeah, and then after that, it was back to normal life.
back to normal. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's just incredible to me that this is the tone we're going to take with so many people around the country and around the world. Wow. It's a wow, but what are you going to do, man? Hey Chris, man, look. Wait a minute. I was going to say goodbye, but we got to do our questions. We haven't done our questions this week.
Yeah, let's let Chris get in the question.
Yeah, we love to have our guests help jump in on these questions, but you can't. One of them is just for Waz, so we can't jump on that one, Chris. But we ask you to send us not stupid questions every week to Athletic NBA Show, and you do that very well. And it's another good week of questions. We will start with from the Don at Metal Hoops Head. He says, which tandem do you think would be better off if they were separated for equal talent but at a different position? Lillard and CJ or Tatum and Brown? That's a good question. That's not a stupid question. I like that question, Waz. So if you had to split up Lillard and CJ McCollum or Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, which tandem would be better off if they were separated for equal talent at the other position? So Waz, I'll give that to you first. That's a good one.
I mean, I'm been on Jaylen Brown greater than sign Tatum for a minute. I've been on that. Right. So obviously that goes without saying. I just think Brown is just, he's just a little bit more dynamic because he's a little bit more athletically explosive, and I tend to gravitate towards those guys anyway. That's my bias, like just the sort of physical stuff. I get that Tatum is very skilled and has been basically since the day he stepped on the court. I just like Brown a little better. And, you know, CJ was actually playing much better than Dame before the season started. But, you know, when CJ went down and Dame was like, all right, I have to start taking things seriously. Like, he's played at a level that I don't think CJ McCollum is capable of. So, you know, I'm taking Dame. I'm taking Jaylen Brown, all things being equal.
You're taking Jaylen Brown. Okay. I'm going to take Dame just because I'm a Dame guy, and I'm going to stand for Dame. That's what I do. That's who I do it for. Cause I would, if you put Dame with just it doesn't even have to be, I'm not going to say with him, with Anthony Davis, that's an easy one. If you put him with Sabonis or Miles Turner, you know what I'm saying? That level of big man, I think he would be devastating. You know, I just think that someone that good would be an all-star caliber, not even like best player in the league big, but just an all-star level big with Dame, I think we'd be ridiculous. I don't know. Chris, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with your point right there. You know, because just because, you know, watching Trey this year with an actual big man instead of Damian Jones, Alex Len, Bruno Fernando. And I look at Trey and Dame in similar ways. I know like a lot of people want to compare Trey to like Steph Curry. I more so see Damian Lillard in Trey. So I would say that your point right there about Dame with a legitimate big man, I think his game would just elevate to heights we haven't even seen. And obviously he's one of the best players in the league. And it's crazy to think that, you know, if he had, you know, one of those big men that you were just talking about, I do think he would be even much better than what we've already seen.
Okay. Let's get to question two from Killer Mikey at Killer Mikey One. Who's the team that the top seeds in the West want to avoid in the first round? I'm torn between the Warriors, no matter how bad they look against the top seeds. Curry, Draymond, and Kerr are still three-time champs and are going to be a problem. Or the Nuggets with Jokic and playoff Murray. Good question, Killer Mikey. What you think, Waz?
I mean, that goes without... This is not even a contest. It's Denver to me by far, right? Like, they've, you know, and people underestimate how injured Denver has been this season, right? Like, Jokic has been the constant, but he's been playing with some pretty bad dudes, right? Like, the rotation has been decimated by injuries this year. And I just think, you know, even if you want to say Jamal Murray is not the supernova that he was in the bubble, because he was unbelievable in the bubble. Even if you want to say he's not that guy, Denver's just way more dangerous. Like, we just watched them beat the Clippers, who everybody thought was a world beater last year, right? And, you know, I get that they're definitely going to miss Grant, who went to Detroit this postseason. But I just think between Jokic and Murray, like, these are big, big, big gamers, man. I would be deathly afraid of those two.
Okay. I'm not sure. I can't say for sure that I believe the Warriors would be, the current Warriors, you know what I mean, would be a major threat to a one or a two seed in the West. They'd be a threat. Don't get me wrong. Curry's that good. He's that dude. He's sensational. And Draymond, and all the points that Killer Mikey made are accurate. I just am not sure that they have quite enough in terms of the front court to really pose, to really scare a Utah or a Clippers or a Lakers in the first round. I would go with Denver as a lower seed. If Denver winds up being a lower seed, I just think the pedigree is there. Jokic's numbers are just insane. His ability to get other people going with his passing is amazing. And then, you know, Jamal, we saw what Jamal could do last year in the bubble. I would tend to believe Denver a little bit more than the Warriors right now. What do you think, Chris?
And I think, you know, the guy you both of you didn't mention, I think if Michael Porter Jr., in my opinion, I think he's been a little disappointing this year. If he can figure it out, especially defensively, I mean, that just gives Denver a really, really talented player who, you know, if he gets going, I do think he has the ability to take over games. I'm really high on him. I think he's going to be a really good player. It might take some time, but, you know, if he can figure it out, I think that's a nice three that Denver has in Jokic, Murray, and Porter.
All right, so the last one. It's Wonder Bread with a U. Shane Wonder LI10, I think is the handle. Can Big Waz explain his constant Tatum slander? Go ahead.
So here's the thing about somebody like Jason Tatum, who basically from his rookie year, because he did exceed expectations and he developed in a way that not a lot of people saw coming, right? Like, he was the fourth pick in the draft. You know, people moved up the draft faults, you know, like he's gotten a lot of praise. And I think Celtics fans, they've seen him as this guy who is going to be, you know, who's going to drive quality, who can drive quality offense unto himself. And I've just never thought of Jason Tatum to be that guy. And I think the numbers have sort of borne that out, right? Like, he doesn't have that quick first step. He doesn't get to the line as much as you would like, you know, sort of a dominant wing that people would like him to be to do that. And, you know, it doesn't feel like that's something he's going to develop. I just never saw him as that, you know, quick twitch. No, they can't do anything about you because, you know, you can overwhelm them physically type of guy. I never saw him as that kind of guy. And so people considered me to be a hater. You know, I remember, so listen, I remember, and I, you know, this is my buddy, so he won't mind. But I remember after Tatum's rookie season, I think they got Kyrie, and I'm listening to my man Windhorse. That's my boy. Windhorse is my boy, but I'll never forget this. This is a team with Al Horford. This is a team with Kyrie Irving on it. And this is Jason Tatum's second season because he, I guess because he killed Rodney Hood in the Cavs series. He was like a world beater, I guess. And Windhorse said, Jason Tatum's going to be the best Boston Celtic this season. And I was like, my goodness, this is kind of wild. But the thing is, Windhorse said it, but it was a sentiment that a lot of people felt about Tatum. Because as a rookie, he didn't stink it up in the playoffs, which normally rookies do. That's true. To Tatum's credit, normally rookies are bad players in the playoffs, and he wasn't. Yeah. And so people just took that and was like, well, if you extrapolate that out to, you know, seasons three and four, he's going to be Larry Bird. And I'm like, guys, like, why? Why is he going to be that? Like, what is he going to be so much better at than what he is as a rookie? And he's gotten better as a playmaker. Defensively, he's a plus defender. You can't take that from him. And he's not even 23 years old, right? So he's a good, like, I respect Jason Tatum's game. I just, if you think he's ever going to be, you know, what Kawhi Leonard is right now, no, that's never going to be his future.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's Kawhi Leonard either. I think he's better. I think he's very good, though.
He's very good. He's an all-star player. He's an all-star. Yeah. He's an all-star.
Yeah. Now, you know, everybody thinks their players are better than they are. Every fan base thinks that, right? I mean, every fan base in the league thinks their players are the best players. So I'm not surprised that Boston fans felt that way. You know, it's fair to say, you know, he's not a top five player in the league. I think that's fair. I think that, and I don't think you're dissing him or hating or anything of that nature if you're saying that. I think that's fair.
I just think coming out of his rookie year, DA, like the expectation was like, all right, this guy is going to be a world beater, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that just hasn't borne itself out, right? Like him and Jaylen Brown are playing excellent this year, and they're a 500 team. A different kind of player, that team is not 500. You understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I'd love to be proven wrong, you know, whatever. Right. If he becomes this dominant force, I'll enjoy watching it.
Right, right. Chris, any last thoughts there as we wrap up here?
I mean, in my opinion, I think Tatum is one of the top 15 players in the league, one of the best two-way guys. That's my take on the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you can make a top 10 argument even. I don't think you can make a top 5. I don't. And if that's the standard, I think that's a really unfair standard both for him and for the people that are saying that about him. So at any rate, gents, it was great. Thank you, Chris, so much. I know you're incredibly busy right now with all of this and you got games to cover on top of it. So thank you for your time, my brother. And thank you, Waz, as always. Hey, if you like what you're hearing here on the Hoops Adjacent episode of the Athletic NBA Show, leave that 5-star review. Don't leave a 1-star review. We'll be very, very upset with you if you do. Or keep it to yourself. All right, we'll talk to you next week.